Chapter 13, Errors of Omission. We do not so much look at things as overlook them. Zen proverb. It's an interesting exercise to look back and ask, in descending order of impact, what have been the 5 top mistakes of my life? When I proposed this question to friends, they chide me about dwelling on the past and focusing on the negative. Yes, I understand all that. But if one spends some time summarizing, an interesting commonality will surface, one that will be useful for future decision-making. It is important to approach the task with an objective and detached persona. Take time to think it out, get it down on paper with objectivity, and the list will stand the test of time. That's how it has been for me. My top 5 list has remained unchanged for 18 years. In my list, and I'll bet yours too, the largest errors were not the result of overt mistakes. They were the outcome of failing to take steps that should have been taken. These are errors of omission. The large errors of omission are bad enough, but the small ones can add up to an equally dire end. Is there a primary cause for errors of omission? Yes. Too often, it's procrastination, or what I call a lack of quiet courage. I'll discuss quiet courage in the next chapter. Chronic, covert, and insidious. A list of a life's 5 largest mistakes could include not finishing college, not heeding that stop sign just before the traffic accident, or not starting that savings account way back in the teen years. What about not keeping one's mouth shut at a crucial moment, or not doing the little things that could have saved a marriage? Or maybe declining to apologize when it was the perfect time to do so. Other errors of omission: failing to get enough sleep, forgetting to lock the door of the car, and not submitting taxes by April 15th. Not taking action is the physical manifestation of any error of omission. What haven't you done? The errors of omission principle is a simple enough concept, but it lies hidden, buried beneath the jumble of life's demands. As usual, recognition is 90% of the solution. And just as the outside and slightly elevated perspective provides a better vantage point for observation of life's hard and cold mechanics, internalizing the errors of omission principle gives you a better stance from which to deal with your own natural inclinations. What follows is a list of still more errors of omission to heed. Think of examples in your own life. Failure to exercise leads to a lethargic energy level and an unhealthy mind-body. To recognize birthdays, anniversaries, and holidays contributes to the transformation of a passionate relationship to one of mutual complacency. Failure to pay a bill leads to late charges. To get enough sleep leads to a less than productive next day. Failure to make the phone call, close the sale, smooth out the misunderstanding, or ask for help contributes to less than desirable outcomes. Failure to clean the house contributes to an underlying sense of confusion. Failure to write up a working procedure for staff leads to repeated mistakes. Failure to apologize or admit a mistake leads to the end of a relationship. Failure to create a daily schedule that includes time to build the business or the relationship leads to no change, no improvement, and continued general malaise. The errors of omission principle works hand in hand with the axiom, what you say or think is irrelevant. It's what you do that counts. Nike's just do it credo, which is as metaphysical and profound as a maxim can be, is perhaps the most recognizable 3-word sequence in the English language, and as such, reconfirms Occam's admonition for parsimony in scientific explanation. Inaction is action. In any context, an omission is something left out, something not done. Here's the rub. It is a choice not to do something that should be done. So laziness and procrastination are choices. Not taking action is a choice. No matter what we do or don't do, we are always making choices. Sitting on a couch and not moving a muscle is a choice. In this life, at a minimum, we take up physical space, absorb resources, and create waste. Even if we do nothing, we continue to have an impact on the world around us. So it makes sense to get off the couch, take that body that is using up space anyway, and do something constructive with it. It boils down to the usual utter simplicity. Since you are making choices all the time anyway, focus on making more active choices and fewer inactive choices. Is your physical condition a system that needs attention? Then segregate it into manageable subsystems and take first steps to improve those subsystems one at a time. Does a disorganized home system require attention? Acknowledge the disorder and begin to organize it, one room at a time. Don't just sit there. What am I not doing right now? How can you begin to use this action principle in your daily life, business, or job? Watch the events of your day as they occur, and while they are occurring, ask, what am I not doing right now that is holding me back? Should I stop and buy a small gift for the person I love? Should I find a way to exercise for an hour? Should I have a chat with a certain employee who seems a bit disconsolate lately? Shall I start right this minute to read that book I bought 2 months ago? Today, will I make an active effort to get control of things by writing a first draft of my strategic objective? Illustration: The power is out. Here is an example of placing a new subsystem between two dependent subsystems in order to gain a more reliable primary system. The story also illustrates how one can use a problem as a wake-up call to take action to make improvements. Late in the afternoon on July 3, 2006, the electricity in Bend, Oregon failed. A lightning strike had disabled a main transformer at the electric company substation on the edge of town. Linda and I were 160 miles to the north, in Portland, at a family 4th of July celebration when Andy called to say that half of Bend was without electricity, including Centratel. A rare event, the power outage did not present an immediate problem because Centratel's internal battery backup system automatically took over, keeping all telephone answering service computer systems operational. The backup system has a 3-hour capacity, so while the electricity was out, we held our breaths, hoping the power company crews would fix the problem quickly. They did, replacing the main transformer in just over 2 hours. Over the years, it had been my experience that the occasional and infrequent power outages had been brief, and in this case, although the outage lasted longer than usual, our backup system yet again covered things perfectly. Without a hitch, our TSRs continued to process emergency calls during the outage. But, because of an aspect of our documented systems methodology, this was not the end of the story. Principle number 7 of our 30 principles document says, problems are gifts that inspire us to action. A problem prompts the act of creating or improving a system or procedure. We don't want setbacks, but when one occurs, we think, thank you for this wake-up call, and take assertive system improvement action to prevent the setback from happening again. Yes, our internal backup system worked flawlessly, but per that principle, we didn't breathe a sigh of relief and move on. Instead, we asked this question. If we have only 3 hours of battery backup, what would happen in a worst-case scenario? What if the electricity was out for more than that, maybe an entire day or longer? That condition had not occurred in more than 40 years because we reside in a region of the country where devastating storms are rare. But nonetheless, what if this outside system, the electric company that resides completely outside of our own control, experiences a catastrophic long-term failure? We concluded that the possibility of a long-term outage was real, and for the welfare of our clients and the viability of the company itself, we had to consider the worst-case scenario. So we took the incident as a warning shot and decided we could not rely 100% on the electric company anymore. We had to be able to process calls without interruption, with or without externally supplied electricity. The system solution? We purchased an on-site generator. The installation was a long, drawn-out, and expensive process with numerous complications, including structural challenges, permits from the city government, and finding the right people to do the work. But the new generator, which operates on either natural gas or propane, ensures that should a catastrophic power outage occur, we will be able to continue to process calls indefinitely. Power outages don't typically cause telephone service to fail because telephone companies have their own backup generators. Per a recurring Microsoft Outlook task, one of our managers tests the generator once a month. Our staff have documented every single step of the generator activation process with off-the-street simplicity, and we always use that documentation in our testing exercises. It's interesting that with each monthly test, invariably there are incremental improvements made in the lengthy written procedure. The power outage working procedure is a living thing. conforming to a changing environment, and the tester's additional ideas for improvement. And how does this installation conform to the work the system dictate of posturing oneself outside and slightly elevated? Perfectly. We inserted a generator between the power company and Centratel, creating the option of having independence from the outside power grid. Now we are outside and slightly elevated from the power company, and no longer must we rely on a critical system that is not in our control. Are you at the mercy of an outside system that repeatedly costs you time and money? Can you fix it or replace it? Can you eliminate it altogether?